Welcome to Irish Passport.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Irish Passport.
I'm Tim McInerney.
I'm Naomi O'Leary.
We're friends.
Okay, well to Naomi.
Anwar Fad, Tim.
This is your passport to Irish culture, history, and politics.
Uh-huh.
I'm recording.
One, two, three. Okay.
Hello and welcome back to the Irish Passport, listeners, where we're coming to you with another hot off the press running to our microphones moment. We haven't had one of these moments in a while, Naomi.
Yeah, at the same time, it feels like there's never a dull moment because all of this stuff continues to happen. It's just that it's not every day that it touches on Ireland, but this is one of those days.
This is definitely one of those days. Anyone who's listened to the news today will know exactly what we're talking about. We are, of course, talking about the announcement by Donald Trump's White House of massive new tariffs, basically on every country in the world.
Almost. Not Russia, interestingly, but yeah, most of them.
You know, I've been looking for that information for ages, Naomi. Listeners, this is all just happening in real time right now. Yeah, I was wondering all day today. I've been at work all day kind of getting the news here and there. And I'm wondering, what did he put on Russia? Because it was never mentioned in any of the news reports, which I thought was unusual.
Yeah, there was no announcement on them. Neither like North Korea and I think Cuba. The argument or justification is that they have existing sanctions of some kind, so they don't apply. But at the same time, it was a bit noticeable as an omission, especially when it came to Russia.
It was the first thing I thought of. The first thing I thought of was, surely he hasn't put sanctions on Russia, his bud over there. Sorry, we should, just in case anyone is really coming to this a little bit fresh or has been at work all day like myself, maybe we should explain what has happened this morning when Europeans woke up anyway. Naomi, tell us.
Yeah, Europeans, I suppose, those night owls who are still up in the middle of the night saw this happen and then the others woke up to it this morning. Donald Trump, the US president, made an announcement waving around these big like list sort of spreadsheet things where he announced that tariffs were going to be put in place into a list of like dozens and dozens of countries, ranging in value from 10% to 99%. And this is like a big economic shock, potentially. It's being described as maybe the biggest shift in economic policy since the 1930s. It would, if all these tariffs are put in place and he does what he says he's doing and it all like proceeds as he says it will, it'll be a historic turning point in world trade away from free trade, which the US has been like a major proponent of for decades and decades and decades, most of the 20th century, towards a more protectionist economy. And we don't really know what that's going to look like because our whole world has been shaped by this sort of free trade era. So it's very interesting. And of course, it means a huge deal, especially to countries like Ireland, which are massively exposed to the US. Their exports to the US and Ireland were only just smaller than exports to the entire EU. So very, very enmeshed economies with the potential for huge ramifications, massive impacts. So let's talk through it. I think maybe, Tim, the first thing to explain is, what is a tariff anyway? Because I don't know if everyone is that clear on it.
Well, you know, it's always good to kind of touch first principles because sometimes you think you're clear on something, but, you know, you actually aren't when you hear it explained to you in its very basic terms. So, yeah. What is a tariff like? Explain to me like I'm a 3-year-old.
Okay, so remember we used to sell like cotton bags, right, which said the Irish passport on them. So what Trump has done is he announced a 20% tariff on goods from the EU. We're selling from the EU. Therefore, that would mean us as exporters of cotton, Irish passport bags to the US, when we go to sell them into the US, we, the exporters, would have to pay a 20% of the value of that bag to the US government. So let's say the bag costs 10 euro or $10. The tariff of 20% would be 2 euro or $10. Oh, sorry, 2 euro or $2. So that would, it's like a tax that we pay to the US government. The impact of it is that our cotton bags become relatively more expensive to cotton bags that are produced domestically in the US. And that's the argument in favor of doing them, is it protects your own manufacturing. If you have cotton, right? So not every country is completely self-sufficient in stuff. The argument against is that it makes things more expensive to consumers. So all those Irish passport fans out there, say if they wanted to buy one of our bags, would suddenly be faced with paying, let's say, $12 or 12 euro rather than the 10 that it would have been previously, because, you know, we've passed the tax on to them and we just included it in the price. So that's more or less what is going to happen now. US consumers will probably see increases in the cost of what they need to pay for goods that come from overseas.
Okay, so this is massive. This is going to affect basically everything, really everything that is traveling between these countries or these countries and the US. Why would you do this? What is the rationale generally for putting in place a tariff?
So kind of in the olden days, it was a way of protecting your local manufacturing. So say you're like a massive producer of, I don't know, steel or something, then you don't want the country over there making cheaper steel and selling it into you. So you slap tariff on them. So it's more expensive to buy their steel and therefore your steel gets bought at home. That's like a kind of classic case of a tariff. It's still quite common on steel as it happens. But we live in a very, very globalized world now where any given component, like we're talking about iPhones, which might have components from like 200 different countries or something like that. So it's a very different world that we live in now. So it's a really retro thing. Also, that kind of manufacturing of goods makes up a tiny, well, not tiny, but a much smaller percentage of the economy than it used to. So it's kind of retro. Yeah, it's something that people used to do to keep manufacturing local and stuff like that. Why does Trump really like the idea of tariffs? We don't know exactly why, but we know that he's been attached to the idea of tariffs for like a long time. It's like a very consistent thing with him. Long before he was even in politics, he was very attached to tariffs. It's something he just kind of likes the idea of. And what they're saying in the White House is that this is all a plan to reduce the US trade deficits.
Okay, right. So yes, I heard this repeatedly on the radio, that Trump wants to get the trade deficit in the United States down to zero. What does that mean?
Trade deficit is the difference between what you import and export from a different country. So let's say Ireland has all the shamrocks, okay? And the US wants to buy shamrocks. So Ireland is selling shamrocks to the US, but the US doesn't have any locally grown shamrocks. So it's got a huge trade deficit with Ireland on shamrocks. It just means that Ireland is selling like 1,000 euro worth of shamrocks and not buying the same back from the US. Mm-hmm. So they're not, they've got like a 0% import of shamrocks from the US. That's basically what a trade deficit is. Trump really dislikes it. He feels cheated if the US is buying more goods from other countries than those countries are buying from the US for some reason. Okay, he thinks that's really bad. It's not necessarily bad, we should underline, okay? Sometimes they're sort of inevitable. Like, for example, the case of shamrocks. Maybe shamrocks don't grow in the US. Or to give a more real world example, bananas. I don't think bananas grow in the US. So they're always going to have a trade deficit in bananas. If they want to have bananas, they're going to have to buy them from somewhere else. And then you have lots of cases where a country can appear to have a massive trade. The US can appear to have a massive trade deficit with a certain country, and it's because they're just importing loads of oil and stuff. I think that's the case with Canada. It's mostly just oil and gas that they're buying, which is why it's like that. It's not that Canada is like sneakily cheating the US or something like that.
Yeah, and the language, of course, that Trump is using is very strong. He's talking about the United States being raped and pillaged by other countries, you know, a little melodramatic perhaps in terms of vocabulary. So he very much does see this as some kind of underhanded trick that's being played on the US.
It is economically eccentric in a way that reminds me a bit of like President Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey. He believed that interest rates worked the opposite way that the rest of the world believed. And he sort of pursued this. He made the central bank pursue this policy in Turkey that didn't make any sense. It was really economically harmful for Turkey. For ages, he did that. And it's like that with Trump. It's like he's really wedded to this idea. And it's like he's got things a bit mixed up in his mind because it's basically the rest of the world doesn't basically agree with how trade works in his interpretation.
I mean,
he's not the only kind of strong man of his stripe to have some quirk like this. I think you see it in a couple of different cases where you have a guy who's like, I suppose, got authoritarian leanings and has a funny idea about something and is going to just impose that on the economy. And it kind of doesn't matter what everyone else thinks, even if it doesn't make sense. And this really doesn't make sense, as we will talk through now. I'd like to kind of lay out what was actually announced and the different tariffs that were put on different countries. Mm, and you will soon see that it doesn't make sense.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the big one that's been making headlines, certainly in the EU, is this 20% tariff that's been placed on the EU. That has put the EU in kind of the, on the bad list, on the naughty list, let's say, of these countries, because globally, most countries are being hit with a 10% tariff, which is also the case for the UK at the moment, right?
Yeah, you could read into that, oh, the UK are special friends with the US and they only got 10%, where the EU, who they hate, got 20%. That's actually not it, though. That's not why it's like that. We know why they calculated it now. It doesn't make sense, but here it is. Okay, so the tariffs that were announced range, as I mentioned, from 10% to 99%. How did they decide what tariff to put on people? They say it's a reciprocal tariff, so they're just responding with what that country already puts on the US. This is not true. Okay, it's not true.
Mm.
The way you get all the numbers that they've come up with is this is kind of awful, like reading maths out over audio, but I'm going to try. Okay.
Welcome to the Irish passport, folks.
Welcome to the Irish passport. It doesn't make sense, but what you do is you take the deficit of one country. The deficit, remember, is like the amount between what imports are and exports are from the United States. And then you divide it by the total goods imported by the US from there. And then you divide that in half. The reason why you divide it in half is, according to White House aide, quote, "The president is lenient and wants to be kind to the world." Okay, sorry, I just thought that quote was so funny.
Sorry.
The king is benevolent. It's
just funny. This is mad.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to tell you about Ireland, okay? I'm going to tell you about what Ireland would be if it wasn't in the EU. Okay, because this is actually really interesting. Yeah.
Can I ask a question about that formula there that you just mentioned? Is this based on something, or is that just, did people figure out that's what all the tariffs actually add up to? Like, that's what they all have in common? Or is this a formula that is supposed to achieve something?
It was figured out by observers. I think it's specifically a journalist at The New Yorker was the first to figure out, oh, you get all of these numbers if you do this particular calculation, and it's correct in every case. But they have since said, yes, that is basically how we did it. Well, I think what the spokesperson for the White House actually said was, no, that's wrong, a lie. What we did is this formula, and the formula was that. Okay, so...
Okay.
Okay.
Do we know if there's any rhyme or reason to the formula, or is it just literally arbitrary?
It doesn't make sense. Okay, so I'll talk about Ireland, for example. I'm going to give the example of Ireland. Ireland only has 20% on its tariffs because it's part of the EU. And that is very lucky, okay? Because if Trump had not gone for the whole EU as a whole and had gone EU country by EU country, which he could have, okay? If he really wanted to mess with the heads of the EU, he could have done that. Then Ireland would be much worse off. I'll talk you through how it is and you'll see how the calculations come up with, okay?
Mm.
So for Ireland, right? Ireland exports more to the US than it buys from the US, okay? The surplus with the US was $70 billion in 2024. Okay, so that means Ireland exported 70 billion euro more worth of goods than it bought from the US. This is loads of stuff like pharmaceuticals in particular. Pharmaceuticals is a huge one. It's drugs, medicines. A lot of them are made in Ireland, including Viagra, by the way. You're welcome.
Mm.
So under the Trump method, right? The exports to the US, by the way, in total from Ireland were 72.6 billion euro. Okay, so under the Trump formula, what you would do is you would take the 70 billion figure, okay, the figure of the surplus, and you would divide that by the total exports to the US, which is 72.6 billion. And that would produce a figure of 0.96. And that 96, that would be the supposed amount of tariffs that Ireland puts on the US, claimed by Trump. Okay, this is what he's done with every country. So he'd say Ireland has 96% tariffs on US goods. Therefore, we retaliate. But because we are benevolent, we will divide it by half. Okay. Oh, and you're going to get 48%. So if Ireland had been calculated individually and not as part of the EU, we would have a 48% tariffs imposed by the US on our export of goods to the US.
And then all of these countries who have 10%, because that's by far the most common number it would seem, those 10%, they still conform to those general formulaic rules.
If you buy more from the US than you sell to it, so the US doesn't have a deficit with you and the US shouldn't be pissed with you at all, or like let's say it's perfectly equal, then you just got 10% as a blanket rule.
Right.
So all those countries are ones which had, didn't have, like the US doesn't have deficits with them.
Okay.
So just as a nice friendly gesture, just slapped a 10% on them anyway.
Okay. Now, some people, I saw some suggestions that there might be some artificial intelligence involved here.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Tell me about that.
Like, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've seen the same thing. So a couple of people put in a query into large language learning models like ChatGPT and, I don't know, Grok and these AI machines, and asked like, how would you, you know, impose tariffs to reduce a trade deficit? And weirdly enough, they came up with this exact Trumpian calculation, which is strange because it's not something that there's precedent for at all. And those figures, like, they don't relate or cohere to one another, you know, like you could be talking about bananas or oil and gas and like suddenly putting that level of tariff back on completely different goods like auto or whatever. It just doesn't make sense. Anyway, but yeah, a couple of AI large language models think that this is how you might go about addressing a trade deficit. We don't know whether a Trump aide did the same thing and asked AI models and came up with this policy, which would be astounding. We don't know if that's what happened or if it's the reverse. And what's happened is the AI language learning models have been fed like Trump economic theory. And that's why they're putting it out. So like they could have, for example, I actually saw someone post that they had asked for a source for this calculation. Then they'd come up with some memo written by like the guy who's in charge of the trade economics in the Trump administration. Peter Navarro, his name is. And that it's sourced a Peter Navarro memo from 2017 as the source for why you do this to plug a trade deficit. I tried to find out if that was a real memo, if it actually existed, or if the AI hallucinated it. I couldn't find it anywhere, but maybe I'm just not good enough with White House archives. But it does indicate that either that particular language model learned it from a real memo by Peter Navarro, who, you know, is obviously someone who actually came up with this Trumpian economic theory, or it learned from Trumpian economic theory and it knows that a likely title of a memo that could have laid out such theory would have been this memo that it put as a source. So maybe the memo doesn't exist, but one way or another, you know, it knows the large language models are taking this from Trump somehow. So it could be one way or it could be another. We don't know. It's like chicken and egg.
I mean, both scenarios kind of outline why it wouldn't be a good idea to take your economic theory from AI, right? Because, I mean, if it is the first scenario where, I don't know, what an intern, I suppose, or someone went and asked AI, how do we do economic theory, please? And AI, you know, gave them this. It does sound like the kind of thing that AI would do, you know, these things that don't really make sense, but it takes you a moment. You have to kind of look at them for a moment to say, oh, no, that actually doesn't make any sense at all.
It looks plausible. Like there are numbers there. There are columns. Like it's like it passes as like a movie prop version of economic policy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It seems very typical of AI. But if in the second scenario, if AI is being fed this by Trumpian economics, then it's being fed these economics that don't make any sense as a good example of fixing a trade deficit. So it's learning the thing that looks like an AI mistake already. So, you know, in both situations, like AI isn't coming out very well.
Exactly. And this is the problem, Tim, because now the AIs will start learning from AI outputs. So someone can copy that and publish it on a website. And then the AI doesn't know that it's AI generated. So as it scours the internet once again for new stuff to feed into itself, and generally, it starts feeding off its own crap.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a huge problem. It really matters what you put into these AI language models. It's concerning.
And you know, honestly, I mean, a little aside here, I've been using AI because I've been going through a lot of documents recently for research. And I've been using AI to say something like, where does it say this? Or does it say this in more than one of these documents? Or something like that, right? To try and just find stuff that's lost in there. And I actually just can't trust it anymore because it's not actually very good at reading. Like even short documents, it gets things wrong and stuff. It says this person said that when the document literally says that somebody else said that. You know, it's like, wow. I mean, my very flawed human brain, tired and hungry, glancing over this once or twice is better than all of your, you know, techno power. This isn't what I was supposed to be sold in AI. You know, come on.
Absolutely. You know, he hallucinates and lies, and yeah, it's not to be trusted.
Not in the slightest. Okay, right. Now let's move back to these tariffs, because Naomi, the human race is not the only group on this planet suffering from Trump's new tariffs since this morning. Penguins are also one of the major groups that are carrying the burden. I'm sure they're very stressed. They're probably sitting around a big penguin table right now, coming up with their political strategy. Why does Trump hate penguins, Naomi?
The reason why we're doing this is because the list of countries is really strange, okay? So the list of countries produced in this document, it goes through all of them and it says, this is the figure which they claim is tariffs placed on US goods, which is just not true, and then the tariff that we place back. But in that list there's bizarre countries in there, okay? So some of them are uninhabited islands, okay? So some of them are like halfway to Antarctica islands. There's at least two of them that are like that, which are just rocks and penguins and maybe a few crabs. They're like used to be whaling stations, but there's nothing there, so like they don't. It's crazy. Then, the penguins got hit. Also, the US has slapped tariffs on its own military bases in a couple of cases. So, like, there's military bases in Asia on a couple of islands. And those islands have now been hit by these tariffs. Like, literally, the entire economy is just a US military base and its contractors. Okay, so it doesn't make sense. One that caught my eye when I was looking through them is Saint-Pierre and Miquelon, which honestly I'd never heard of. And I was like, what is Saint-Pierre and Miquelon? Saint-Pierre and Miquelon has the distinguishing honor of supposedly imposing 99% tariffs on US stuff. So it's been slapped with a 50% tariff in return, which is like the highest you can get, okay? So I looked it up. It's a French island. It's off Canada. Like it's French territory. Now, apparently it's extraterritorial EU or something like that. Its currency is the euro. I was unable to establish in the time available whether it's covered by EU trade agreements and customs agreements and whether you can even put a tariff separately on this place or it can put tariffs on you independently. Like, does it have its own autonomous tariff placing measures? I doubt it does. But I'm not really familiar enough with the governing arrangements of Saint-Pierre and Miquelon to be able to tell for sure. But there's only like 5,000 people living there or something anyway, so it's bizarre. Well, my question is, like, what list of countries were they looking at? Because they are not countries. A lot of these places are not actually countries. And I wanted to ask you, Tim, like, has the French press picked up on this? Because I don't think it was the only one. I think Réunion was also slapped with a tariff independently of France, which was different to the EU level. Like, do they have an opinion?
Yes, it's coming out slowly. It's been, it started to get reported this afternoon, really, in the Metropolitan French press, because the Metropolitan French press was just straight up on the EU response to all this, which we'll talk about in a minute. But it was coming out in the actual overseas presses. So, this whole setup is super complicated. It's not surprising that you found it difficult to find out the exact like custom status of Saint-Pierre and Miquelon. France has overseas territories, the Outre-mer, some of which, about five of which, are considered just part of France. They're regions or departments. So it's like a state. It's like if the France was a collection of states, it's like a little state of France.
Okay.
They are all part of the European Union because they're part of France. However, as far as I understand, even though they have the same customs rules as the rest of the European Union, they're actually fiscally considered different. So when you move stuff between La Réunion and France, it's considered like an export or an import fiscally, even though the rules, the actual customs rules, are the same. And it's been suggested that maybe that's why these places were considered differently. Because, I mean, some of the headlines that I saw were that the French overseas territories have been declared independent by Trump. Because that's, like you're saying, you know, he's treating them like countries, like independent countries. So, you know, the whole thing is very strange. Not everyone is sure. So the president of La Réunion, the region, Huguette Bell, she said today that Donald Trump est un ignorant. So he's just an idiot. He just doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, and that seems entirely possible as well. Réunion, for example, is in the Indian Ocean. If you were looking at a map, you may not guess straight away that this is actually a part of France.
Sure.
But yeah, that's I'd say there's more reporting to be done. Nobody can figure out why they've been given different rates. A lot of them have been given 10%. Réunion has been given 37%.
For reasons unknown.
Just random.
It will be to do with the amount of imports and exports to the US and vice versa from Réunion. And it just must have a different code in the US system. So they must mark stuff coming from Réunion as different. It must just be counted differently in their system. And that's why it's like that, I would imagine.
Lending more and more credence to this AI thing, but fine. I mean, something that definitely does lend credence to the AI thing is the uninhabited islands. Like, they're not countries, are they? Like, to be a country, you surely need an assembly or a government or something, right?
Yeah,
you know, not just penguins.
I think there must be territories of somewhere. Anyway,
yeah.
The other thing is that, like, when it comes to complex, ambiguous, like, trade status, there's another Ireland angle here, and that is what's going to happen with Northern Ireland, because...
Right.
As we reported at length, it has a special status now where it has free access into the EU single market, but Northern Ireland is still part of the UK. The UK was given 10% tariffs. So as far as I can establish, Northern Ireland exports to the US will have this 10% status, right?
Mm.
But things could get really complicated if... the EU starts retaliating and putting its own tariffs on US goods that are coming in. So US goods that are coming into the EU. Then things could get rather complicated. I don't think anyone actually knows what the answer is at the moment. It's worth pointing out that when we're talking about all of this stuff, I should have pointed this out earlier, but the figures that the Trump administration has used to calculate those supposed deficits and supposed tariffs that other countries are charging to the US, which is false. He's only looking at goods, okay? So he's not looking to services. So the calculation I gave for Ireland, right? It was like, oh, it looks like Ireland has this, you know, sells way more to the US than it buys from the US. That is true, but only if you look at goods, not if you look at services. If you look at services, Ireland buys more from the US than vice versa. And this is really relevant because a lot of those countries that just got slapped with enormous tariffs, like, they actually do buy more from the US than vice versa. It's just that they're in services and for some reason that's considered not to be anything, not worth anything by the Trump administration. Very strange.
Can you give an example of services like this?
Like insurance, for example. Right. Insurance or like anything that's like not a tangible physical thing that you might be buying from one place to another, like legal services or... might be a streaming services, I'd say, yeah. Or like intellectual property rights is a huge one when it comes to Ireland.
Right.
Those kind of things. Anything that's not like your old fashioned, you know, like factory made stuff or
Shamrock
agriculture.
Exports.
Yeah, that's kind of like physical things that need to be shipped here and there. I wanted to point out as well that the other thing that, if you look at these lists of tariffs and you see they make no sense, it's not just that they include these uninhabited islands and US military bases and whatnot. It's like strategically they're nonsense. They don't make sense. So there's a bunch of countries in Asia close to China which have very long historical ties to the US and they've just been slapped with massive tariffs, like particularly Vietnam. Like Vietnam is a massive exporter to the US. And it just got hit with massive tariffs. Like some of the harshest tariffs have been reserved for them. Vietnam has been hit with 46% tariff, okay, which is massive.
Wow.
The Trump administration claims that Vietnam imposes 90% tariffs on U.S. imports, which is nonsense. Again, that's just based on the fact that Vietnam sells loads of stuff to the U.S., probably for historical reasons. Cambodia is not a wealthy country. They got hit by 49% on Cambodia. And Laos as well, massive. 58% on Laos. Like, it's just,
wow.
It's cruel, actually, when you think of countries that are so dependent on exports to the US and which are, like, they don't have the economic resilience necessary to weather something like this. Like, that's potentially destroying their economies. And it doesn't make strategic sense whatsoever. Like, the US has for about 50 years had a policy of trying to orient Vietnam away from China and into its orbit. And it's gone up in smoke, like, with that. Like, remember the whole Vietnam War, all of that, you know, that whole thing. So, yeah, essentially what's happened there is you've handed over the region around China wide open to Chinese influence. Because if the US isn't your friend anymore and you're not concerned with importing into the US and you're looking for other markets because you need to fix this big economic problem that you have, you're looking at the other huge superpower, the one that's nearer to you in your backyard, which is China, which is a massive shift potentially in world geopolitics.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, that's the enormity of this is pretty hard to swallow. To get things in perhaps more digestible bites, let's take a look at Ireland's response in, I suggest, two times or two levels. So first of all, the response that's been happening in Leinster House in the last few hours, which I'm sure is pretty hysterical. And also Ireland's response as part of the EU bloc, the EU's response. So should we start with the EU, maybe? It makes more sense. And then we can zone in a little bit more on the specificities of Ireland.
I'll tell you what, I'll do Ireland first, because there's more to say about the EU. So when it comes to Ireland, I think there was actually a little bit of relief that it could have been a lot worse. They were concerned that Ireland could be singled out by itself and not as part of the EU. That would have been a much more difficult situation. And according to the calculation that I set out, it really could be a lot worse, right? So they were a little bit like, okay, that's not as bad as it could be with the 20%. Like, it's still really bad. The other thing that they were relieved about is that pharmaceutical products weren't included. So there's a kind of exemption for pharma products, drugs, because, you know, US people have enormously high prices for medicines as it is. A lot of those medicines come from Ireland. We're like a major pharma center. And if you put up a 20% price, tax on those incoming, it means that the price would go up even more. And maybe that's not something that Trump wants to impose on citizens. So he wants to avoid that. Having said that, it's within the realm of possibility that pharma could still be hit, because the Trump administration has indicated that we haven't heard the last of this. There's going to be specific sector by sector tariffs as well that they'll announce. So I think on the automobile industry, for example, and on probably on pharma, maybe on something else, they'll come up with some special number which is different from the 20%. We don't know what it'll be. And the other huge question is, will it be in addition to the 20% or instead of? So if it was like a 6% tariff, that could be good or bad if it turns out to be 26 in total. Anyway, so that's something that they're, you know, keeping their eyes peeled to wait to see what happens.
And or asking ChatGPT.
Yeah, exactly. The other big fuss that's been going on in Leinster House and in Brussels has been Ireland trying to influence the EU's response. So the EU has been treated as a bloc by the Trump administration. As I kind of mentioned, if he'd picked off like France, Germany and everyone separately, that could have caused havoc, but he actually didn't do that, which in a way did the EU a favor. So what's going to happen now is the EU has to decide how to respond. When it comes to trade negotiations, that's something that the European Commission takes care of the body of civil servants, which is presided over by Ursula von der Leyen, which has all these trade experts and so on, and led, you'll remember, the negotiations on Brexit. Maroš Šefčovič, him, an old familiar figure from the podcast, he'll be the head guy on this.
Old Marek.
Yes, they now have to decide what to do. Ursula von der Leyen came out at like 5 a.m. or something this morning and said a few words and said, you know, this was no good, and like it was against free trade, and the EU would be considering its response and so on, and they were planning measures of some kind or another. So Ireland is very worried about what those measures could be. The Commission has quite a lot of autonomy when it comes to trade, especially if it's acting in an emergency. We saw this during the pandemic when they sort of triggered Article 50 and then backtracked on it. They can do stuff like that. In an emergency without going through the member states. And they have a lot of ability to like just take the lead on trade policy. It's rather complicated, so I won't get more into it than that. That's really concerning to Ireland because as a smaller country, they fear having less influence with the Commission than some of the bigger EU countries on this. So Ireland, what does Ireland want? They've been, over the last week in the build-up to the announcements of these tariffs, the Irish airwaves have been just full of Irish MEPs and economists and members of the government talking about how important it is that there isn't an EU overreaction and that the EU try to negotiate with Trump. So they want something like this to happen. They want the EU to quote-unquote capitulate on something. So find something that would look, that Trump could claim as a win and give it to him. And then Trump backs down and doesn't impose the tariff after all. And a big trade war is averted. That's what Ireland wants. Everything to go back to the way it was before. And if it means massaging Trump's ego, so be it. That's probably what the UK wants as well, going by the noises from their government. There are those in the EU who want a different response, like France. Okay, France wants to respond. They think you got to stand up to the bully. Okay, they think we're not going to do that because he'll come back for another bite. You know, this won't be the end of it. What we need to do is we can play that game too. So we impose tariffs right back. That means all the stuff coming from the US into the EU, tariffs will be placed on that, which are roughly, you know, at a similar level to what you've just done to us. And then that would have the same impact of economic havoc on the US as, you know, the stuff put on the EU would. So things like companies pausing or cancelling investment, layoffs, you know, all this kind of thing. The argument in favor of doing that is that Trump wants to be liked by his public. And if the American public are suffering and feeling the pain a lot because of tariffs that Trump started, then he might change his mind. And so then what the EU should do is act to try and impose economic pain on US consumers. So that's the basic argument. This horrifies the likes of Ireland because they're like, no, not this. No. We need to calm down, everybody. We want to negotiate. We do not want a full-blown trade war, which would be very acrimonious, and it would probably take ages to unwind. And Ireland would be very much affected by, because it's such a globalized economy.
It's interesting, these approaches. Both of them are quite traditional. They're quite traditional kind of political responses, which I suppose makes sense. Both of which have these profound flaws when it comes to dealing with this individual, right? Because in the first case, if we were to take the Irish position and say, give him a win.
Yeah.
This reminds me a little bit of the negotiations during Brexit, where it was all about giving symbolic wins, mostly for the British press, right?
Yeah, and to the unionists as well. There was constant talk of that, yeah.
Yeah, just kind of giving, oh yeah, the EU has capitulated, look at us roll over, and then just like, please get over this, can we move on? Almost like kind of playing games with the toddler and just hoping that they kind of get tired of it, you know? But even at that point, like what happened during Brexit was Britain got these really minor wins, or the Conservatives got these really minor wins, and then they'd kind of forget about them and come back and say, we want another win, you know? And at that stage, it was already kind of going outside the normal political agreements of how this stuff works. But it stayed in the realm, I suppose, of reality. I can't really imagine Trump even being that reasonable with this. I could say he gets a win and he literally forgets about it and does the thing he was going to do if he didn't get a win anyway. You know, like his actions aren't particularly logical ever or reasonable or based on this. Mm-hmm. So that's a flaw in the first approach. And the flaw in the second approach, of course, is the idea that imposing tariffs right back at him and causing strife and unemployment and misery in the US in the hopes of making his public unhappy with him.
Yeah.
You know, like half of the public in the United States already is profoundly unhappy with him, like living in a kind of dystopian hell of their own because he's in control of their country. That's half of them. And the other half are either kind of not particularly engaged with how any of this works and or are cultishly in his loo, right? Yeah. Like in his thrall.
So they won't blame him.
They'll blame anything else but him. So that just doesn't seem to be able to work either. I mean, right. What do you do, right, with this kind of figure?
I don't know. The other question is, like, you know, will he be bullied by the markets in the end, you know, because he likes to see the you know, the FTSE and the green color, you know, everything going up. You know, the arrows that go up for good. And currently the arrows are down and it's red, you know, and it's bad. Like, will this affect him at all in the end? I feel a little bit of Schadenfreude. Do you pronounce it that way? Probably not. Sorry, I don't speak German. Schadenfreude, however you say it. Because there were so many people with financial interests and people in industry and business who were playing down the prospect of the Trump administration and saying, you know, we don't mind about it because at the end of the day, you know, they're going to be pro-business and there'll be this bonfire of regulations and we're happy about it. And in like ahead of Trump actually taking office, the markets were going like up in the US and stocks were going up because people were getting... We're really happy and like rubbing their hands with glee, thinking about all that money they were going to make by these things that the Trump administration was going to do. And now it's like, no, they do not care. They are doing things which will harm the economy and they don't care. And I feel like it's sort of, I don't know, like a little bit deserved, like they effed around and found out kind of thing.
Right. Well, yeah, that's for sure. And then I do feel like if there's anything that could get this administration into line, it would be the lobbying power of big businesses that, you know, are going to put their foot down at some stage. But I have a question. You were mentioning earlier that eccentric economics is something that's typical enough to people who might display authoritarian leanings. Do we know if there is any kind of school of thought, protectionist school of thought, around Trump? Do we have any idea of people who might be whispering in his ear about this? Or is this really a kind of despotic move, like an absolute ruler kind of thing?
Well, yeah, he does have people around him who believe in this kind of stuff. It's not just him, but he also has been attached to the idea of tariffs for a really long time. Like I mentioned, it came up in interviews for him, like way back when, I think in the 90s and stuff like that. Like it's a thing that somehow wormed its way into his brain and lodged there. So he has a thing about tariffs and like, it's a little bit of a misunderstanding. Like, so for example, you know, when he announced this stuff, like he gives these like rambling addresses and it's hard to pay attention to all of it. But for example, when he was talking about tariffs on Mexico, he was of the impression, and he said it twice in his discourse, that he was placing tariffs on illegal fentanyl, the drug that was coming in from Canada. So again, illegal fentanyl. So stuff that's being smuggled. Tariffs are placed on goods that declare themselves at customs. So importers who declare to customs and pay the tax to you. Drug dealers do not declare their fentanyl when they're coming into the United States and say, hey, don't forget to take 20% or whatever it is. Here you go. I'll write a check. That's like, so clearly he has a kind of misunderstanding or something about how all of this works. Also because of the way he talks about the trade deficits. It's familiar a little bit from the like debates about NATO, because He seemed to view NATO as a kind of protection racket where people paid like dues to the US. That's the way he used to talk about it a lot. Like people paid duties to the US to protect them under NATO, which wasn't true. There's like a 2% of GDP level which you're supposed to spend on military spending, and many countries in Europe didn't meet that, which was, you know, something Americans complained about for a long time, but Trump would talk about it as though something, it was like a membership fee that the US collected, which is this misapprehension, which I'm sure he was corrected on, but it never seems to have changed his mind about it. He's sure that's how it works.
So, I mean, just to warn our listeners here, we are recording this on the afternoon of the 3rd of April. Mm-hmm. So by the time you hear this evening, things may have already changed. Do we know? I mean, Micheál Martin has come out and made some comments about the justification for these tariffs. Mm-hmm. Do we know what direction or what's the emergency measures that the Irish government are jumping to right now?
So you're right to mention that things could change, because we kind of went through this a little bit in the past already, in that the US announced tariffs on Canada and Mexico, and then it turned out they weren't going to kick in for like 30 days, and then there was negotiation, and then they get extended, so they kind of didn't get put in place. There'll be loads of hope that, you know, oh, this is just a negotiating tactic and there's method to it all, you know, and he has an aim. I actually don't think so. I don't think that there's a big grand plan and it's all very clever and stuff like this. I think it's chaotic. Like, you can see that it's chaotic from what we were talking about, the list of countries, the way that they've calculated this. Maybe it serves some purposes of the administration, but I don't think there's a grand, clever plan to this. No, I do not think so. In terms of what the Irish government is doing in the short term, Taoiseach Micheál Martin came out quite quickly and just said, we deeply regret this. There's no justification. He says, you know, disrupting the deeply integrated relationship between us benefits no one. He notes that like the 4.2 billion worth of goods and services are traded each day between the EU and the US. And he says it hurts jobs and people on both sides of the Atlantic. And he's argued for a proportionate response by the EU and said that it has to be unified. And crucially, he says a confrontation is in no one's interest. So that's a reference to not wanting the like trade war type thing, and saying that he wants an outcome which enhances the existing strong transatlantic trade relationship. Another key one is he says that there's this risk of inflation from tariffs, which we should spend just a moment underlining. Inflation has been this issue more or less since the end of the pandemic, and it had been tapering, gotten under control a bit, but tariffs obviously cause things to be more expensive because there's literally a tariff on goods. So it causes things to be more expensive. And it puts central banks into a bit of a dilemma, because usually the usual response to inflation is to increase interest rates, which slows down lending and slows the economy a bit and reins in inflation. But the thing is with tariffs is that there's a risk where you get both inflation and a slowing economy. So prices going up, but at the same time you've got like investment decreasing, people getting laid off, spending decreasing, all this kind of stuff. And that's a really difficult combination, because the central bank usually tackles a slowing economy the opposite way, by making it cheaper to borrow, by reducing interest rates so that more spending goes into the economy, so that it picks up again and there's more investment. So tariff-induced inflation is a very difficult one to address in policy terms by central banks. So it's something that governments are really dreading. And also I think they're mentioning inflation a lot as a kind of like hello, like waving to Trump, like hi, because Trump supposedly cared about inflation. You know, supposedly it was one of the things he was proud of. He claimed, you know, the last administration made inflation go up and he brought it down. So supposedly it's something that he cares about. So they keep mentioning it to him that this might increase inflation. There's all this stuff about the price of eggs in the US. You know, I don't know if you've followed that stuff, Tim.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, eggs are expensive. Yes.
Yeah.
There's a shortage of eggs in France.
Are there?
There are shortage of eggs. And I recently refused to pay €5 for 3 heads of garlic.
That is a lot.
So I don't know if I can take any more inflation. Anyway, right. I have another question.
Yeah.
How does all of this play into, or does it play into, Ireland's corporate tax rate?
Yeah. Ireland's corporate tax rate. So you mean the tax on multinationals, which has been increased?
Yes.
There was a big international negotiation on corporation tax, and the impetus for it was that it ultimately is bad for everybody if we keep trying to compete against each other. Countries try to compete against each other by cutting their corporation tax lower and lower. So the OECD, this club of rich countries, led negotiations for everyone to agree that there would be a minimum level of 15% corporation tax for large multinational firms. Ireland had had a lower rate than that. It was 12.5%, as I recall. And Ireland went along with this process, and it took a while. Anyway, ultimately agreed, and now it's in place in Ireland, this 15% rate, so it was increased. The US has now kind of reneged on that agreement and said that it won't respect it anymore. So it just kind of, it's one of these issues where it punishes people who have played along with the US in the past, if you know what I mean. Because Ireland kind of, the government of Ireland spent capital, like it's spent political capital agreeing to this. And now the rug has kind of been taken out from under it. And it's like, well, you shouldn't have played along at all, you know, because now the US is pulling out of it anyway. So it's all kind of falling apart. If you mean, like, are there more bad things that the US can do economically to Ireland? The answer is yes, okay, because one of the major dangling questions, apart from tariffs, is that question of tax. It's not so much the rate of corporation tax as where countries decide they ought to pay tax. And currently, Ireland collects a lot of tax from a small number of companies that declare an unusually large amount of corporation tax in Ireland in a way that's quite contentious, because other countries think that they should be taxing it because they think it's profits ultimately that have been made from selling to their citizens. But anyway, for this reason and that, it is declared in Ireland. Ireland thinks that this is legitimate and taxes it. And Ireland has been making a packet in tax receipts, tax intake, that it's been able to spend on public, whether the public know that or not, it has, for the last while. The US is very aware of this, and it's come up like a couple of times, and Trump is like angry about it. And yes, he could change that. So, for example, he could no longer allow US multinationals to like keep their profits abroad. For example, he could force them to repatriate them, and then they would be taxed in the US. There are little changes that he could make to the US tax code, which could, take away a lot of that money pretty much overnight. That's something that definitely could still be coming down the line.
Okay, right. Yeah, and I do wonder, I suppose, since there's lingering resentments between lots of countries in Europe and Ireland about this tax tradition, about these US companies, that maybe that might feed into or factor into the differing approaches that are being espoused by Brussels and by Dublin. Oh,
exactly. Yeah. Because in Brussels and in Ireland, nobody knows what the EU response is going to be, right? It's all very mysterious. No one knows whether they're going to announce reciprocal tariffs or what they're going to do. The Commission has been very tight-lipped. Nothing's been announced. Meanwhile, the French government is busy briefing to French press that the EU is going to hit digital services from the US. Have you read this, Tim?
Yes, I do. I have an article right here from France Info, which is like a public service news broadcaster. And yes, the government spokesperson, they said that the EU is ready to hit digital services starting in April.
Okay.
They have lots of details about it, or so they claim, that it's on a two-level basis, that it will start in early April, and then there'll be another scaling up of this hit back in late April.
Yeah. This is like the worst nightmare of the Irish government, because obviously digital services is a huge part of the Irish economy, and they do not want Irish exports to the US to suddenly become more expensive with tariffs. They don't want imports from the US to suddenly become more expensive with tariffs. It's like a bit of a nightmare. And it explains why you've had all this vehement talk over the airwaves for the past week of all these Irish officials at every level saying like, no, we don't want to have a trade war. We want to be calm in our response and stuff like that. Because clearly France has been pushing for tariffs to be placed on the tech multinationals, specifically digital services, which, by the way, to me, it looks like they're finally looking to scratch an itch, which has been bothering them for a long time, because this whole thing of digital services has been a France bugbear for ages. So now they see an opportunity to like get it, and they're trying again. And it seems like that's probably why Ireland was so nervous about this. We don't know whether the commission will ultimately do what France wants or what, but they're already briefing this in Paris, which is interesting.
Okay, all right, so we should wrap up for the time being, but listeners who want to hear a little bit more White House content, you can check out the half pint that we made yesterday before any of this stuff kicked off, which we're going to put up on Patreon for our Patreon supporters, and where we are going to talk about Micheál Martin's visit to the White House for St. Patrick's Day, which happened about 2 weeks ago, even though it feels like about 200 years ago in political terms now. But it's also very interesting actually to listen to us talking about that White House visit just before this happened, because you might be able to spot some augurs in of what was to come. Yeah, because there were a few little clues in that White House visit actually that we do mention unknowingly. So if you want to hear that, you can head over to www.patreon.com/theirishpassport and you can become a supporter of the podcast today and help us keep making episodes for the future.
Yeah, do check that out. All the gossip on reading the tea leaves of what it meant with the sudden unveiling of Conor McGregor at the White House just after the Irish government thought everything had gone so well. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, everyone. And yeah, if you have any questions or comments, just get in touch with us. Slán for now.
Okay, slán, everyone.